There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Luke's English Podcast is made possible thanks to kind donations from my listeners and support from my sponsors. And today I'd like to tell you about Spoken. This is a learning English system that puts an English coach in your pocket. With Spoken, you can get private English lessons through your favourite messaging apps like WeChat, Line, WhatsApp, Facebook Messenger and more. Their English learning content is designed specifically to meet your needs as a learner of English. It's ideal for people who need to improve their English for work, travel or exams, and it's very convenient because you basically just do the tasks in your phone at your own pace. And check this out, you can sign up for a free 60-minute private one-to-one lesson with a trained native speaking instructor, which includes a free assessment of your current English skills. Let me just say that again, in case you missed it. You can get a free 60-minute one-to-one lesson, which includes a free assessment of your current English skills. Spoken are also offering discounts to listeners of my podcast across all of their courses. To qualify for all of this stuff, you need to use my URL, which is getspoken.com/LEP. Getspoken.com/LEP, or click a Spoken logo on my website. You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. Hello, dear listeners, and welcome to a new episode of Luke's English Podcast. This episode features another conversation with one of my friends for you to listen to as part of your learning English diet. And yes, let's imagine that learning English is a bit like having a diet plan. But instead of limiting your intake like you do with a food diet, with this English diet, the plan is just to consume as much English as possible and really enjoy it. Just binge on English as much as you like. Yum, 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 yum. Okay? So yes, here is some more natural English conversation for you to indulge in at your leisure. The friend I'm talking to in this episode is my mate Moz, who has been on the podcast a couple of times before. You can find all of his episodes in the archive. Just search for Moz. That's M-O-Z. The long-term listeners will know Moz, but if you're fairly new around here, here's a two-minute summary of what you need to know about him, and I think this is going to take no more than 2 minutes, this little summary. So, I met Moz, whose real name is actually Mike, or in fact Michael J. Buchanan Dunn, but I always call him Moz because that's his nickname to me. I met him first doing stand-up comedy back when I was living in London a few years ago. He lives on a canal boat, spending most of his time in London, where there is a canal network that crosses the city. Moz gives guided walking tours around parts of central London, especially Soho. The theme of these walking tours is murder. And Moz takes groups of visitors to different locations and then describes real murders that happened in those places. The tour includes stories of serial killers, crimes of passion, and mysteries that have never been solved. Quite a lot of my listeners have actually taken his tour when visiting London, and you can do it too if you're in town. Just go to murdermiletours.com to get the details and to book a tour. It's a really different way to explore parts of central London with a local person, and it's much more interesting than the normal boring tourist walks, because it's all about murder, isn't it? And it's got a 5-star rating on TripAdvisor, which is not bad. Moz also has his own podcast, which is called the Murder Mile True Crime Podcast, in which he describes in plenty of detail the stories that he tells briefly on his walking tours, and also more. There are more stories in the podcast that you don't get on the tours. He started the podcast just 7 months ago, and since then it's gone from strength to strength. It got a nomination in this year's British Podcast Awards in the True Crime category. So Moz is something of a specialist when it comes to describing the stories of true crimes in London. His stories are painstakingly researched using court and police records from the National Archives, and Moz is a well-experienced and enthusiastic storyteller. And it's the storytelling that I'm interested in here as much as anything else, because stories can be really great resources for learning English, especially when the storyteller is enthusiastic and the content of the story is gripping. These stories help to draw you in, they make you focus on the details, and they help you to just get more English into your ears, which is so important, as we know. Well, Moz is certainly keen to describe the events in his stories, and you have to agree that there is something fascinating about the subject of murder, right? I mean, there's something fascinating about it. Of course, it's horrible and tragic, especially for the victims and their families. These are often appalling crimes. But at the same time, it's hard not to wonder about the motivations of murderers, the lives that they led, the conditions in which it could be possible for one person to take the life of another. It's hard not to sort of wonder about these things. This is why crime and mystery novels, TV shows and documentaries are so popular. Apparently, we just can't get enough of this kind of thing. So although their subject matter is dark and quite explicit, I think that these stories are compelling and well told, and that is reason enough for me to present them to you in this episode. Now, as I usually say when Moz comes onto this podcast and talks about murder, I think I should warn you here. Moz's accounts of these crimes often contain some very graphic and explicit descriptions of some truly horrible acts of violence and moments of horror. So if you're sensitive to this kind of thing, if you don't like blood and violent imagery, if you're squeamish, you might want to proceed with caution, okay? If you're playing this with children around, like if you're in the car and the kids are listening, you should probably pick another episode, okay? My episodes are usually aimed at adults anyway, to be honest, but this one in particular is not suitable for children. So that should be clear. If you don't like the gory details, please proceed with caution. If children are present, you should listen to this later when they're not around. Okay, so we're very nearly ready to begin here. At the beginning, you're going to hear Moz's quick report from the British Podcast Awards ceremony, which he attended just a couple of weeks ago. And then he goes on to tell us about some of the murder stories that he's been researching over the last year or so. Okay, so without any further ado now, let's go. Let's listen to Moz and his stories. All right.
Yep.
Let's get started. So, Moz, hello. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. Luke, yourself?
Very well, thanks too. Just tell me, are you on your boat at the moment?
I currently am. I'm on the boat. It's Bank Holiday Monday in the United Kingdom. It's a nice, warm, sunny day. It's about 26 degrees, blue sky, birds are singing, there's the little coot ducks are out, nibbling away at algae, I believe it is the word. And yeah, it's a beautiful day. I'm loving it.
Some of my listeners are now thinking, wait, the what are nibbling at the what? The what?
Ah, yes.
The coot ducks are nibbling at the algae. Right. Whenever you use words on this podcast, you have to explain them. So go on.
So a coot is smaller than a regular duck. It's probably about the size of a size 7 shoe. They're black and they have a little white skull cap on top of their head, which is where the phrase, if someone is bald, you'll hear the phrase bald as a coot. That's because they have a very slick cap on top of their heads, which makes it easier for them to eat various things, you know, when they're diving underwater. And they're tiny little ducks, and they go around nibbling on algae, normally on the bottom of boats.
Algae?
And that's what they eat. Yeah. So algae is like, it's the plant of the water. So it's not really a fungus, but it's more kind of a weed. But all ducks and geese love it.
Yeah, yum, yum, yum. Nice bit of algae there. Actually, what's up with you? So you went to the British Podcast Awards ceremony. I didn't, but you were there. How was it?
You were very much missed.
Yeah.
It was fantastic. To explain to your listeners, it's a very prestigious podcast awards where all different types of podcasters are invited along. They're nominated for very important awards. It's only the second year it's been running, but it's kind of like people like great podcasters like Luke up against big people like the BBC.
Yes. So you were really not... You were nominated in one of the categories.
Yeah, I was nominated in the Best True Crime Podcast category. My podcast, Murder Mile True Crime Podcast, has been running for about 7 months now. A podcast every single week. It's all about murder, all set within Soho. So many of your listeners who have heard our previous episodes and who've been on my walk as well, thank you to all of you guys. You've been amazing. I know it's that people who listen to Luke's podcast, because they turn up and go, "Hello, Moz." They're the only people who call me Moz.
What does everyone else call you?
Mike or Michael.
Right, because according to all of the publicity and materials for your walks, you're Michael J. Buchanan yes. Dunn. But on my yes. podcast, you're Moz.
That's what I'm used to.
Right.
But it was a fantastic award ceremony. It was hosted in a very large theatre in King's Cross. Mm-hmm. Lots of big sponsors, which is very exciting. But so I was in a category against two BBC shows.
Right.
So obviously they're big and powerful and have got lots of money. And, they don't do as many episodes as we do, but they're professionals. And so two BBC shows up against three independent shows like myself.
Okay.
Sadly, Murder Mile didn't win.
Oh.
I know.
Pity.
It was exciting, though, because it was kind of like everyone had said, "Oh, you're going to win this year. We know it. You're going to win." And I was like, not going to win. Not going to win at all.
That's what people said to me. They're like, "Oh, you're definitely going to win this year. Oh, you definitely are going to win." And I was like, not sure, considering, again, the competition I'm up against.
As we were going through, it was kind of like two BBC shows, three independents, one of whom was last year's winners.
Mm.
So they announce bronze, silver, and gold kind of in order, and they go, "The bronze winner is They Walk Among Us, who were last year's winners." And I was sitting next to them, and they were like, "Yay," because they didn't expect to win.
Yeah,
but they're happy to be nominated. And they turned to me and said, "Oh, Mike, you're going to win. We know it. You're going to win." So they said, "And the silver award has been won by a BBC show." And we went, "Well, you know, they have to put the BBC in there because they're a big company." Mm. So, and, you know, professionals. And everyone turned to me. There's loads of hands on my shoulders and people going, "We know it. You're going to win. You're going to win. We know it." So they say, "Okay." And the gold winner of the prestigious Best True Crime Podcast Award, the judges have said is, and they do a little description of what the podcast is about. And they said, "This is an incredibly well-researched podcast based around true crime. The focus is on narrative and storytelling. And all of the description was what my podcast is about." And everyone was, "It's you. It's you. Murder Mile is going to win." And then they said, "And the winner is The Assassination." And all of us just went... And then we left and went for a drink, and that was it.
Well, disappointing. But yes, what an anticlimax when you expected to... Well, you had the suggestion that it might have been you.
I was honoured to be nominated and to be up against such prestigious people as well. Mm. So for me, actually, I didn't expect to win. And it's given me a goal for next year to win.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Go for it. You can do it.
And also, it was an honour to be there on behalf of Luke's English podcast as well.
That's right. You were like my representative at the awards because I couldn't be there. During the day, I was kind of thinking maybe I should send Moz maybe I should send him like a speech, like an Oscars acceptance speech. And then and I was thinking, well, if I'd won, then surely like the organisers of the podcast awards would have contacted me and asked me to send in some sort of speech or maybe like a little video acceptance speech stuff like that. And there was like zero contact from them. I had received an email though, like I don't know how long before, maybe a week or 14 days before the ceremony, they sent an email out saying, we just wanted to let you know that you're really close to being in the top three, you know, that you're one of the podcasts that's received some of the most votes. So there's a chance that, you know, you're really in with a chance. And that really got my hopes up. And I was thinking, oh my God, I'm going to make it. This is going to be my year. And I just thought all I need is just a little extra push. And so I then started to kind of go into overdrive and hassle my audience into voting for me. And I was like, if I could just persuade just that portion of my audience who never do anything other than listen to my episodes, all those ninjas who just listen, maybe if I can get them to actually vote, then they'll do it. And well, in the end, nothing. I was at home refreshing Twitter when the awards were actually happening to see what was going on. And I saw, first of all, that I was in the top 20. So they narrowed it down, didn't they, bit by bit?
Yes.
Right? What happened?
So your listeners actually did a great job because you weren't in the original top 20.
What?
Because I looked at the original top 20 that they announced about 2 weeks before.
Ah.
And you weren't in there. So when you actually messaged me and said, I'm in the top 20 nominees, I was like, that's weird because he's not. But on the night, you were. They did the whole list, and I turned to Ben and Rosie from the They Walk Among Us podcast, and I went, oh, that's my friend Luke. That's Luke's podcast, and that's really exciting. And then they did they said, okay, here's all the top 20. And your listeners did a great job. Not only did they get you into the top 20, but in that list is big celebrities. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're talking people like George Ezra.
Right. It's
George Ezra and Friends was up there, and lots of famous people that I don't know. And when they whittled it down, sorry, to whittle means to
You know what? Every single time you're on my podcast, we have this phrase to whittle something down. Yes. We've had it twice before. Usually you're whittling down evidence until you get to the core of a case. But in this case, they whittled down the number of candidates for the award from 20 down to 10. So it means like just, you know, cutting something down to size, let's say. Usually using a knife on wood. But in this case, it's just removing candidates from a shortlist. So they whittled it down then to 10.
Yes, they whittled it down to 10, which is very exciting. And then they went, okay, I think they said that over all of the votes for that, there was over 160,000 votes, which is really exciting. And they said the top three, it was literally a hair's breadth. So there was very few votes between them.
Oh, really?
On the top three. They didn't announce who the top 10 were in order. They just announced the top three, so I'm not too sure where you were, but it was very exciting.
But I was in the top 10, which is you know, great as far as I'm concerned. It's just a pity I don't get to put something on my website, you know, like a little medal kind of thing, which is always nice to be able to do, isn't it, kind of to show people.
Did they not send you because as you're a nominee, I can send you the thing. I've got a little thing for websites.
Yeah, but the thing is, I wasn't a nominee because the listener's choice category is unique. And the thing about it, all the other categories were short lists of nominees, like five podcasts in each category. But the listener's choice was there were no nominees. What it was is just like every single podcast that was associated with the UK was available. So you to vote for it, you went in to their website and you searched for the podcast using their search engine. And there were, you know, hundreds, maybe thousands of podcasts in there that everyone could have voted for. So when it was, you know, whittled down or narrowed down to 10, that was 10 out of, you know, over 1,000 probably.
Yes.
Other podcasts. So, you know, I'm very happy about it. And I've talked about it so much on the podcast now that I feel like my audience is like, yeah, move on. So let's move on, shall we? Now, what about your podcast then? The last time you were on this show is when you were just launching it. And so 7 months later, how's it going?
Fantastic. Obviously, just got the nomination. Very mm-hmm. exciting. Figures are going up very quickly. People are really embracing it because it's just like my tour. It's a podcast all based around murders within Soho. So it's all the ones that I can't do on the tour. Mm-hmm. But what it gives me a chance to do is really dive deep into people's lives. So each week I have 30 to 40 minutes where I can intensively research a victim or a murderer's life. Mm-hmm. Whereas on the tour, I have like 5 minutes.
Right.
So I've just literally done, I think last time I mentioned about the Blackout Ripper, who was mm-hmm. a murderer in the 1940s, so during World War II, who attacked 6 women over 4 days.
Okay.
Really brutal, horrible murders using knives, a can opener, candle, everything he could find around these ladies' houses, he would attack them. And then just leave them where they were. So someone would find them the next day and see them posed in horrible, horrible poses and all cut up and, oh, disgusting.
Oh, my goodness. So is this something you've been working on recently then, the Blackout Ripper story?
Blackout Ripper finishes this week. It's on the podcast. It's an 8-part series. I've just edited them together into a 5.5-hour episode.
Whoa!
It's a biggie, but what I've done is I've spent 9 months researching this. So if you, any of your listeners can go online, you can type in the Blackout Ripper. Mm-hmm. He was in the Royal Air Force during 1942, and he made full use of the blackout. So this was the during World War II, to make sure that German bombers couldn't find specific targets in London. Everyone had to switch their house lights off, close their curtains, shut their doors. If you had a car, you had to either have your headlights off or dimmed. Mm-hmm. So there were special kind of little slits that you put on your headlights, mm-hmm. just so there was no light anywhere. And London was pitch black. And he used that as an opportunity to attack women. What I've done for the first time is with each episode, I've gone into the back history of each victim. Because what I deliberately try to do is, do you know if you read up on Jack the Ripper? The famous 1880s East London murderer, who everyone's familiar with. Mm-hmm. If you look at the victims, all you normally get is kind of their name, a date, and a collection of injuries. Mm. And for me, I this is what I do with the tour and the podcast, is I say to people, victims are more than just a collection of injuries. They are a whole life. So what I do with each episode, each victim, is I go into their back history and start from the day they were born and tell you everything I know about their life up until the point that they're murdered.
Wow.
So it gives you an insight into their life. And I've done the same with the Blackout Ripper. No one's done this before. This is the first time it's been done. So your listeners, if you type Blackout Ripper online, you'll get his name. You might get his date of birth and a picture, but that's all you'll get. But what I've done is I've gone into his entire back history, and it's an odd one. He comes from a very privileged background. Okay. He had a mum and a dad. They were together, middle class, not from a lot of money, but good money. He was well educated, mm-hmm. but something seems to have gone wrong along the way. And even though he was from the north of England, so he had quite a northern accent, mm-hmm. His mum was a Geordie, which means she came from Newcastle. And his dad was a Yorkshireman, so he had a real Yorkshire accent. he tried to hide it with a very posh accent, so he was always desperately trying to hide who he really was. And it looks like there was some bullying going on when he was a child, but...
Really?
I won't give too much away, because it's in this week's episode why I think he committed all of these murders.
Okay, so my listeners have got to check out probably the whole series about the Blackout Ripper if they want to know more about why he committed these crimes.
Thank you to all of your listeners, by the way, those who tune into your podcast and tune into mine as well. They've really been forwarding me some great positive feedback.
Oh, that's nice.
And in return, what I do is I do a full transcript of each episode as well, so they can listen along and read the transcript as well.
That's actually really, really useful, because, you know, if you're learning English while listening, it's sometimes vital to be able to actually see the words that are being used, so that you can,
yes,
you know, just make sure that you know which word it was and see how it's spelled. And it's weird, often in many cases people, when they hear the words, they don't recognize them or they can't notice them. It's only until they see them written down that they kind of go, oh, it's that word. Oh, it's that's what he's saying. So, yeah, that can be a really important way for people to sort of connect the written word and the spoken word together, which is great. I'm sure that my listeners are very appreciative of the fact that you've been providing them with transcripts. That's great.
It's also useful as well, because I tend to throw in words that I think everyone knows, but then I realize they don't, like frippery.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to explain that, isn't it? It's like frippery is like accessories, but frivolous accessories.
Oh, yeah.
But I kind of throw that into a sentence, and it's only when I've recorded it I realize, hang on, most people won't know what frippery is.
Can you give me an example sentence with the word frippery in it? So putting you on the spot now. There.
No problem. I was going out to the podcast awards wearing my finest suit and frippery.
So what would be your frippery then in that case?
I guess it would be nice badges. I did on the night I wore kind of like, I was wearing a suit and a t-shirt really, but I had a nice big badge that said Murder Mile, and I guess that was my frippery.
Okay, so kind of all the adornments and things that you would wear.
Adornment, good. Although it's quite, I guess it's a word that no one really uses anymore.
Yes, I guess people don't have frippery like they used to do back in the old days. These days it's just stuff like, what would people call it? Accessories, right?
Accoutrement.
Accoutrement, yeah. Okay, so the Blackout Ripper is the story you've been working on for this season. You've got
yes.
a couple of you've got your next season coming up later on this year, and you told me that you've got two really decent stories to tell in there. Can you give us like the basic versions, and if my listeners want to know more and all the details, they can tune into the next season that's coming. But can you give us like the kind of the two stories in a nutshell?
Absolutely. So the first one, if you remember in the first season, and I've mentioned this on Luke's Fantastic Podcast before, about Dennis Nielsen, the serial killer from the 1970s and 1980s, who passed away about 2 weeks ago.
Right, yeah, he died in prison.
He did, yeah. And his whole thing was he was a gay man growing up, 1950s, 1960s, but he started murdering other gay men during the late 1970s, early 1980s. Now, I'm going to go back to this and discuss his second victim, because he murdered his first victim by mistake.
Oh, really?
And he thought, oh, my... Yeah, he was drunk. He was drunk. He was alone. It was New Year's Eve. He was upset. He saw a young boy who he fancied called Stephen Holmes. Mm-hmm. And he was like, oh, let's go back to my place, have some drink, have some sex. And then during the night, this is on episode 12, my last podcast. Mm-hmm. He saw Stephen Holmes and he thought, you're going to leave me, aren't you? You're going to leave me like my mum did, like my dad, like all my family. He got paranoid and he strangled Stephen Holmes to death.
No.
And then he went, what am I going to do? It's like I've got a dead body in my flat.
Yeah.
So he hid the body, and then he realized, because it was a homeless boy, no one cared. The police didn't come. Families weren't calling. No one cared about this homeless boy. So he kept the body for 7 months, and then he disposed of it. And he thought to himself, okay, I'm going to stop drinking, because drink fueled him to it fueled his aggression and his paranoia and made him upset. So he thought, I won't drink and therefore I won't kill. The problem is he started drinking again because he enjoyed it, and he met a 23-year-old Canadian boy called Kenneth Ockenden, who was born in the United Kingdom, but he'd lived most of his life in Canada. Mm. He'd come over to the United Kingdom for 3 months to spend some time with his family who lived down in Croydon, which is about 10 miles south of London. Mm-hmm. This was his last day in London. He He wanted to see the sight, so Kenneth was walking around London, and he popped into a pub called the Princess Louise in High Holborn, which is just outside Soho, kind of near Leicester Square. In there, as always, he met Dennis Nielsen. Dennis was on best behavior. He was talking to him. Dennis is very clever. He's very articulate. He's a good speaker. He's unlike most people you'd meet. He got on well with Kenneth, and he said, I'll show you the sights of London if you fancy. So they had a little tour around London, seeing Buckingham Palace and 10 Downing Street. Then went back to Dennis Nielsen's flat, had a couple of drinks, had a nice meal. And then it happened again. Dennis was there. His paranoia kicked in. He was like, oh my God, this man is going to leave me tomorrow. Tomorrow he's going to go back on his plane to Canada. I'll never see him again, and I love him. So as Kenneth was sitting there listening to music on the earphones, Dennis grabbed the cord of the earphones, strangled him with it, and then he thought, oh God, I've done it again.
Oh me, there I go again, murdering someone.
We've all done it. But this was the interesting one. So the first victim, because he was a homeless boy, no one cared. With Kenneth was from a good middle-class family. He was traveling back on a plane the next day to Canada, and his parents were waiting for him. And within a couple of days, Kenneth Ockenden's picture was all over the news on programs like Crime Watch and Police Five, which are the police programs we have in the United Kingdom, or had. And he thought, oh God, this is it, I'm going to be caught. And no one caught up with him.
How on earth did the police not manage to track this guy down?
I mean, no one saw Kenneth and Dennis together, and they couldn't put them together because they'd only just met. But so after a little while, Dennis really liked Kenneth. Kenneth was exactly what he was looking for. So he bathed him, which was part of his routine. He'd take the body, he'd put it in a bath, he'd wash the body, bathe him, put a fresh pair of socks, pants, and a vest on him. That shows the era. He was wearing a vest. And then he got into bed with the corpse of Kenneth Ockenden and curled up with him. Gave him a little kiss on the cheek and said, good night, Kenneth.
Oh, my word.
So over the next couple of weeks, while the body was still fresh, this happened during winter, so he'd sometimes hide the body under the floorboards where it was really cold, so the body remained very, very fresh.
You say sometimes. Because he did this again and again with numerous people, not just with Kevin, right?
Yeah. So in total, this was 15 people in total.
Wow.
But sometimes this would happen. He would murder over the summer. And when he would remove the bodies from under the floorboards, that was his place of hiding them, or where he hid them.
Yeah.
In the summer, they would be hot. They'd have maggots in their eyes, their mouth.
Oh.
In the bottoms. I apologize to your listeners. I hope you're not eating. But with Kenneth, because it was so cold, it was a very cold winter, keeping him underneath the floorboards kept the body cool. It was like Dennis's own personal mortuary, his own morgue. And so he'd bring the body back up and he'd go, right, I'm going to have a nice evening in with Kenneth. I'm going to put Kenneth on the armchair next to me on the sofa. I'm going to have dinner and we're going to sit together and watch television.
Oh my God.
So Dennis had a relationship with the corpse, almost like there were two boyfriends.
Oh, weird.
Did you enjoy that?
Well, sort of, yeah, I do. I sort of did enjoy it because weirdly, I quite like the disgusting, you know, I quite like disgusting, horrible stories like this, especially when you realise, oh, it's true as well. It's not even just made up. It all actually happened. Oh, my God. How
it's
weird.
Yeah. It's the sadness of it, though, is that Dennis he's not like most murderers where he's interested in death and dismemberment. He's just lonely.
Yeah, it's really, really sad, isn't it?
He just wants someone to love him. And the fact that with all except one victim, almost all of them were young men he found attractive, and they were going to leave him for, you know, to go and live their own life.
Right.
Right. And that he couldn't take that. It just made him upset.
Oh, what a sad story. But also sad as well that for example, Kenneth's parents were there at the airport waiting for him and he never came back.
Never came out, just before Christmas as well. So he'd been away for 3 months, and the night before he called his dad and said, "I'm on the flight home tomorrow. I'll see you then."
Oh, no.
And they never found his body as well, because Dennis dismembered the body. He cut it up into pieces.
How do you actually know what happened then in some detail?
Dennis Nielsen never wanted the murder. So his first victim, as I mentioned, entirely murdered by mistake. Yeah. He was drunk. He was upset. So with all of his victims, each time Dennis kept hoping that he wouldn't murder again. He was like, "Please, I don't want to murder again." And he would. So when he was finally arrested, this was after 5 years of murdering, and he'd already murdered 15 young men. When the police arrested him, he was so relieved. He was like, "I just want to tell you my story now." So if your listeners go online, if you type in Dennis Nielsen, so it's Nilsen, type in Dennis Nielsen interview, and you can see loads of footage of Dennis sitting there casually, smoking a cigarette, telling the police just everything.
Wow, that's amazing.
And when you listen to his voice, he's got a nice Scottish brogue. So it's his voice is it's. Do you know that some Scottish accents, like say with Glasgow, can be a bit harsh? Because he was northeast of Scotland, it's a very soft, subtle voice. And when you listen to his voice, it's very calm and warm, and you can understand why homeless young boys looked at this man and thought, "Yeah, he's like a father figure. He had money. He had a place to live. He bought them food, and also he was intelligent."
Yes.
And he's got a nice soft voice as well.
Wow. Okay. So yeah, I guess I'll link a video of Dennis speaking on the page for this episode, so that my listeners can listen for themselves and hear him giving his own stories. Then, which is, I guess, where all these details actually came from. Assuming that he was telling the truth.
That's a good point. Yeah, I mean, when you do listen to Dennis's, he wrote a 2-volume biography, autobiography of himself, and it's called The Story of a Drowning Boy, which has never been released, but extracts of it have been released because of the Human Rights Act says that anyone who is a murderer can't profit from their crimes. So because Dennis Nielsen has written a book, he can't sell that book and make money off it. But when you listen to him in any interviews,
Eager.
He's quite arrogant. Yeah, absolutely.
And arrogant and proud.
Yeah, and he knows that he's intelligent, so he doesn't give very clear descriptions. For example, there was a gentleman, I did an episode on this, the people who survived Dennis Nielsen. So he actually let quite a few of his victims go. Some by mistake. So, for example, Carl Stotter. He met Carl Stotter in Soho in a pub. This is where he met most of his victims. Went back to his house, had some food, had some drink, had some sex. This was his routine. He got drunk, saw Carl Stotter asleep, got paranoid, thinking, "This young boy doesn't love me. He's going to leave me the next day." So he strangled him. And this was, Carl Stotter would have been victim 11. So he'd already done quite a few. Actually, no, he would have been 12. So he'd already done a load of other victims. And he thought to himself, okay, he left the body. He took the body into the bathroom because he'd learned his lesson. He got the body and he pushed it underneath the water to make sure not only had he strangled it, but he drowned it as well to make sure it was dead.
Right.
He took the body out of the bath, put it in a chair and sat there having a smoke of his cigarette, trying to work out what he was going to do with the corpse. Because body was there. Was he going to have sex with it? Was he going to hide it? Was he going to chop it up? He had choices. Dennis had a little dog. It's like a little rough collie, but a collie dog, so a little mongrel dog.
Yeah.
So not one breed, but two separate breeds. Mm-hmm. Bleep was the name of the dog. Bleep came over and started licking Carl Stotter's face. Mm. And Carl Stotter's fingers were starting to twitch. And Dennis looked over and went, oh my God, Carl is still alive. He's not dead. And all of his guilt just kicked in. All of Dennis Nielsen's guilt. He just went, oh my God, I need to save him. No longer was he a murderer. Now he had to save this young boy's life. So over the next 2 days, he dedicated all of his time to saving the life of Carl Stotter.
Oh my God. 2 days?
He got 2 days. He got him back to health. He got him in bed, recovered him. Carl noticed when he recovered, Carl noticed that he had bruises on his neck and in his head, which was pounding because he'd got a horrendous headache and his eyes were all bloodshot and his lips were bloodshot. Carl looked in the mirror and he saw a big red mark around his neck. And he remembers seeing Dennis. He heard him because Dennis was behind him. He heard Dennis behind him. He felt a tightness around his neck and he heard Dennis saying, keep still, like that. And that was Dennis strangling him. But Dennis convinced him that Carl had a nightmare and had got himself trapped in the cord of the sleeping bag that he was in.
Oh, my goodness.
And so the next day, Dennis took Carl back to the train station, said, it was lovely to see you. Hope we meet you again. And they said goodbye.
Oh, what? And the guy was like, yeah, just got my neck caught in in the cord of a sleeping bag. The guy didn't think, oh wait, he tried to murder me.
Nope. Because Dennis was such a... Carl said that this is where we get a lot of the information from because there was literally, we reckon there's 9 victims who survived, 3 who testified against Dennis in court. Mm-hmm. And Carl Stotter was one of the most important ones. And he said Dennis was, he was clever. He was very articulate with the way he spoke. He was unlike any other man that he saw in that pub. Most of them were kind of dock workers or factory workers, but Dennis was a civil servant. He worked in a very high profile job. He had money. He was clever. And he just said, there's no way in the world that he tried to kill me.
Wow. Wow.
In fact, a friend of Carl Stotter's looked at him and said, this doesn't look right. You have to go to the hospital. So they went to the hospital and the doctors looked at him and said, yeah, all of your injuries are consistent with being strangled.
Oh my God. So then he realized, whoa, he tried to kill me.
Yeah.
And then he spent 2 days saving my life. What's going on?
It's baffling, isn't it? That you could have someone who is a murderer on one hand and yet is someone who saves lives as well.
Yeah.
But really? Dennis was like that. He was very compassionate. Oddly, he loved people. He loved animals. There's not an evil bone in his body. But when he was drinking.
Right.
He was, paranoid. He couldn't cope with being alone.
But, you know, some people listening to this, and I'm sure many people in the world hearing about Dennis Nielsen will just, you know, be thinking, but the guy's a monster. He doesn't deserve to even live, you know. In the end, when Dennis did get caught by the police and, you know, he admitted to his crimes, what kind of punishment did he receive?
So they could only prove that he murdered 6 men. Because he'd chop up the bodies and he'd burn them on a bonfire in his back garden. And to make sure that, because this was daytime and there were loads of houses surrounding his back garden. To be honest, it wasn't his back garden. It was one that he shared with all the flats above him.
It was a shared garden.
And yeah, there were 4 flats in one house.
And this is where...
They
all shared the same garden and this is where he burned the cut up bodies of his victims. And no one noticed, like, for 5 years.
Well, he would put a large rubber tyre, so like a car tyre, on top and burn that. So that disguised the smell of rotting flesh, or burning flesh, because it has a very well, if you've ever cooked pork, when overcooked it, it's very, very strong smell. But some people were watching. One day when he was burning some of the bodies in the garden, two little girls from the next garden were looking over the fence, watching him making a bonfire.
And the little girls didn't realise what was going on?
Nope. No one did. No one did at all. So he, in total, so they could only convict him of 6 murders and 3 attempted murders, because that's all the bodies that he could find. He was originally sentenced in November 1983 to 25 years in prison, which was the maximum offence that you could be charged with around that time.
Some people will, as I've said, some people will be thinking that that's not enough for the murder of 6 people. I mean, I don't. You're obviously not an expert on the criminal justice system yet, I suppose. But I mean, you know, what do you think would be the court's justification for giving him what many would say is quite a lenient punishment of just 25 years? I mean, you know, for example, if he'd survived beyond the length of that sentence, he could have walked free after 25 years, even after killing 6 people.
Yeah, I mean, he would be walking today. He would have been freed, 10, 15 years ago? Around the 1990s, so he would have been in prison for around 7 or 8 years by this point. Obviously, they couldn't charge him for being, insane.
Mm-hmm.
Dennis Nielsen did not want to go an insanity plea, which most murderers do, because obviously if you're going to kill someone, unless it's a crime of passion where, you know, someone attacks you or for whatever reason. With Dennis's case, because he's a serial killer, he could have gone down the insanity route and said, look, I'm mad, you know, and therefore they can lock him up for as long as they want. But because Dennis knew exactly what he was doing, even though he was drunk, he said, yes, I murdered those men. This is why I did it. They could only give him the maximum sentence, which was 25 years. But a couple of years later, in the mid-90s, Jack Straw, who was then the Home Secretary of Great Britain.
Yeah, like the sort of basically like the Justice Minister.
Yeah, absolutely. He made the decision that there were quite a few cases out there where 25 years was not enough. Because 25 years to 30 years is kind of like a what they call a life sentence, they decided to implement a whole life sentence, which is there's currently 72 people in the United Kingdom who have a whole life tariff, which means they will never be released.
Yeah.
No matter what.
They're in there.
Dennis is one of those.
They'll die in prison kind of thing.
As Dennis did about 2 weeks ago. Apparently, he was going in for stomach surgery. He was 72 years old. He'd been in prison for about 34 years. He was at HMP Full Sutton, which is in Yorkshire. He went in for a very routine stomach operation, and he didn't recover. Died 2 days later.
I see. Wow.
Mm.
Wow, wow. So that was the end of his whole life sentence, as you said.
Yeah.
Okay. So in season 3, then, of your podcast, you're going to be going into more detail regarding some of Dennis's victims, are you?
I think so. Some more of Dennis. Some of your listeners, if they like true crime, will know about Dr. Crippen. So Dr. Crippen was a murderer. He was meant to have murdered his wife, Cora, in around 1910. But there's a lot of people out there who say that he never murdered his wife. So I'm going into that. I will explain to you why Dr. Crippen was innocent and why he was hanged, and yet he shouldn't have been.
All right. So Dr. Crippen is considered to be like a famous killer.
Mm.
But you're arguing that he actually never did it.
There's a lot of evidence to suggest. So just to put it into context for your listeners, Dr. Crippen was a very small man. He had he's kind of quite weedy with little glasses. So he really couldn't stab anyone or, you know, commit any horrible crimes because he was quite weak and little. He had a wife called Cora, who was a famous opera singer and actress. She was really big. She was quite a big lady.
Mm-hmm.
He had found himself a new girlfriend, but he obviously couldn't divorce his wife. He was unsure how to get rid of the relationship. This is where it gets very murky. It's hard to work out what happened next. But Cora, his wife, disappeared. Dr. Crippen and his girlfriend, called Leneve, hopped on a boat to New York. And this was the first time that Marconi had developed the telegraph system.
Okay, so this what we're talking like the early 1900s.
Yeah, about 1910-ish.
Okay,
I think it was. They used the telegraph system to radio the boat, which was revolutionary. The first time it had been used to say, "Do you have a man on the boat called Crippen?" Or actually, he was under an assumed name, and they went, "Yes, we think we've got him," and they arrested him in New York. Which is fantastic. They messaged New York in advance, but they came back, they checked his house, and they found under the stairs, like buried, the skin of a body.
Oh.
and a little swatch of pajamas, so like a small strip of like the Dr. Crippen's pajamas. And they were like, oh, here's the body, it's just the skin, there were no limbs, there was no head, there were no feet, just the skin
as well, like the skin had been removed,
it was just basically like a decomposing torso, but there were no arms, you couldn't identify who it was.
Right, I see.
But there was a famous pathologist called Sir Bernard Spilsbury. So any of your listeners watch things like CSI, like all the forensics programs, mm-hmm. Dr. Bernard Spilsbury was the father of forensic science. He created a lot of things that we still use today. And what he did was he said, okay, we can't determine who the body is, but there's a scar on the back of the body, and it correlates exactly with an appendix scar that Cora Crippen had, his wife.
Right.
So they went to trial and they said, this is definitely the body of Cora Crippen. Dr. Crippen definitely killed her. He was found guilty and he was executed. Wow. Just one problem. A couple of years ago, some pathologists took a sample of that skin and they analysed it.
Wait, just a couple of years ago? Sorry.
Just a couple of years ago. So they still had it on file, but because technology had bought up, they checked they got a piece of the skin, they checked the DNA on it, and they found out it's not a woman. It's a man.
Oh. Weird.
So the body that everyone said in the basement was Cora Crippen wasn't Cora Crippen at all. It was someone else. But no one knows who. So.
Wow. And do we know what happened to Cora Crippen in the end?
That's one of the big mysteries. Everyone said that she ran away with her boyfriend to America, but there's no proof of that.
Wow. Just one of those weird mysteries.
So I love this. So I'll be doing a bit of that. Also, I'll do a very, very quick one here.
Okay.
I'm going to open with this story, which is, Mr. Luke, do you know who Glyndŵr Michael is?
Glyndŵr Michael?
Glyndŵr Michael. He's a Welshman who was... where's my notes? So he was born in 1909. Do you recognise the name?
Glyndŵr Michael. Glyndŵr. No, I don't, frankly, no.
That's weird because he saved your life.
He saved my life.
He saved your life.
Normally, I'd remember that if someone had saved my life.
Interestingly, he saved my life as well.
Really?
Yeah.
Is he the inventor? Is he the inventor of the podcast?
Oh, he's not the inventor of the British Podcast Awards. I'll tell you that.
No, he's not. Is he?
He probably saved almost everyone who was listening to this podcast as well.
Go on.
So, Glyndŵr Michael, born in 1909, came from quite a poor background in Wales. His father was a coal miner. His mother was a housewife. Really had quite a poor upbringing, had to go where the money was. His father committed suicide when he was 15 by stabbing himself in the neck because he ran out of money. Mm. He lived with his mum for a little while, but unfortunately his mum passed away when he was 39 years old because he was broke and penniless. He moved to London. Unfortunately, he had no money. He had lots of mental problems. He found a disused warehouse in King's Cross. On the floor was some bread. He was hungry. We're not too sure whether he knew that the bread was laced with poison, rat poison, but it was. So he ingested it, he ate it, and over 2 days he slowly died of a very horrible phosphorus poisoning, which basically ate his innards. He suffered from something called smoking stool, which basically means that any time he had a poo, it was like fire, and it would steam as well.
Oh, my God.
And his entire innards basically just disintegrated from this horrible, horrible poison. And it took him 2 days to die. He lapsed into a coma and then he died.
And this is the guy who saved my life?
He's the guy who saved all of our lives.
By just, you know, demonstrating to us that you really shouldn't eat bread that's been laced with rat poison.
I wish it was that simple. Glyndor Michael. He died in 1943, and this was a key point in World War II, where basically all of Germany had all the Nazis had basically taken over Europe. They were ready to invade England. Mm-hmm. Everyone was in panic, and we couldn't quite work out how to get all of the Allied troops back into Europe, because the Nazis had heavily defended basically all the coasts.
Yeah.
And there was one way in, and that was through Sicily. But everyone knew that Sicily was the only way that we could get all the troops in.
Yeah.
So Churchill and all of his clever men knew that they needed to find a way to make the Nazis believe that we weren't going to come into the into Europe via Sicily. They needed to make them think we were coming in via Greece.
Mm-hmm.
So what they did... This was an idea that was concocted by Ian Fleming, who obviously wrote all the James Bond books.
He was a spy, wasn't he? Or he worked for the intelligence services.
Yes, absolutely. So it was one of his ideas that he came up with. So what they did was they got Glyndor Michael, the body of Glyndor Michael. His body was perfect because he'd been poisoned. Mm. You couldn't trace the poison in him, but also his body hadn't been injured. You know, he hadn't been blown up. He hadn't been killed in a car crash.
Right.
So they got his body. They dressed him to look like a marine officer.
Yeah.
They gave him all the proper paperwork. They gave him like a wallet with loads of little pieces of bus tickets to make it look real. They put in their love letters, so it made it look like he had a relationship with a nice lady in the United Kingdom. So he all looked official. It was all fake information.
Mm.
They put him on a submarine and took him down to wherever, just off the Spanish coast.
Mm-hmm.
They dropped the body over the water, let it float. He'd been dead for like 5 months, but they'd kept him in a fridge long enough to make it look like he'd only been in the water for about 3 weeks.
Oh, my God.
So his eyes were sunken into his head, and he was rotten and smelling. It looked about right, and the body.
They were like, "Yeah, okay." His eyes have sunken into his head. He's rotten and smelling, but fuck it, this'll do. It's the best we've got. Send it. It's the best we've got. We've got nothing left. This is our last chance.
It was a clever idea though, because what they didn't want him to look. They wanted him to look like he'd been in the water in the Mediterranean for long enough following an air crash.
Right.
But what they'd done, he's got proper military uniform on, and attached to his wrist was a suitcase, like a little attaché case. Mm-hmm. That a lot of important documents would be held in.
Yes.
Spanish fisherman called Antonio Rey found him, did what he was meant to do, took him to the authorities. The Spanish authorities got the body. And they had to work fast because it was a hot day and he was smelling really bad. And they got him, they looked at him, they checked all his paperwork and they went, yep, this is a British officer. He died in an air crash. They put on his death certificate, drowning, and they wrote his name, Major William Miller, was the name I'd given him.
Yeah.
But what the British wanted to do was inside this, the attaché case, was a letter. Hidden in like the third paragraph of the letter was a little note that basically said, we're going to be invading Europe soon, but we're going to invade via Greece.
Right.
And they knew that they could follow it. So they followed it, go all the way up to Hitler. And Hitler got this piece of paper and he was like, oh, that's what's going to happen. They're going to invade via Greece. So he moved all of his panzer tanks and his battalions to Greece, away from Sicily, which left the door open for the Allied troops to come in.
Wow.
So that was the first invasion before D-Day, and that was Glyndor Miller. Glyndor Michael. So Glyndor Michael, the homeless man who'd never achieved anything in his life at all, did nothing in life, but in death, he became a hero.
Wow. Thanks.
That'll be episode one.
Thanks, Glyndor.
Yeah, no, he's amazing.
Yeah, that
it's such an amazing story.
That is actually an amazing story. Really, really bizarre and weird and grotesque, and yet fascinating and just, yeah, really, really good. Nice one. So that's going to be probably episode one of the next season, is it?
Yes. So what I'll be doing is 20 episodes. I'm going to end with a multi-part episode. So The Blackout Ripper was 8 episodes. I'll probably do a 3 or 4 part episode on...
Dennis?
I've forgotten. No, not Dennis Nielsen. 10 Rillington Place. John Reginald Christie. So I'm going to do... He's another murderer. I'll explain some other time. That's complicated.
That's another story for another time, that one.
Yeah.
Okay, that's brilliant. So where can my listeners find all of your stuff then?
You can go to iTunes. I've just signed up with Acast.
Oh, yeah.
So there will be adverts on the site so I can make money.
Finally.
Because obviously very few podcasters make money. I spend 60 hours a week and I don't make any money off it. So finally, after a year, I can make some money.
Yeah, it's about time. It's about time, really.
Yeah, but you can go to iTunes or just type in Murder Mile True Crime Podcast. I'm on pretty much every platform.
So that was Moz there, back on the podcast, telling us some of those weird, creepy stories of people killing each other and stuff. But I have to say, he's getting very good at telling these stories. He's been working so hard on his podcast, doing all his research and stuff. So I think the research is paying off. The practice is paying off. He's becoming a brilliant storyteller. If you enjoyed this conversation, let me recommend Moz's podcast, just in case you're looking for more stuff to listen to in English. As he just said there, it's available on all the usual platforms where you get your podcasts. Search for Murder Mile True Crime Podcast. Quite a lot of you already listen to his show, of course, which is great. Now, the next episode, the plan is that the next episode is going to also feature Moz, and it will include a vocabulary quiz focusing on the language of crime, different nouns and verbs for different types of crime. So vocab hunters, watch out for that one. Well done for listening all the way to the end of this episode. As I always say, I know that, you know, it can be difficult to keep up with native level speech. You know, if it's not your first language, as I know all too well, when I listen to people speaking French, it can be quite tough. But you've made it all the way to the end, so well done. Give yourself a pat on the back. It's important to celebrate things when you're learning a language. It really is. It's important to celebrate the little victories. For example, whenever you manage to say something exactly how you wanted to say it, well done. Give yourself a pat on the back. Whenever you remember a word that you learned and you actually use it, well done. Little pat on the back there. Whenever you listen to an entire episode of the podcast and you don't stop, even if, for example, there are some moments when you didn't understand everything, if you kept going and you didn't give up, well done. Give yourself a pat on the back. It's important to celebrate these little victories because it's all about motivation, you know? Like you should celebrate the good things and the mistakes, the problems, the errors. You should just use them or see them as little opportunities to improve. That's the kind of positive frame of mind that you must adopt if you're going to learn another language effectively. It's something I'm attempting to do with French. It's like a constant struggle to stay positive when, I mean, you know, I've been living in France for quite a long time. It's been more than 5 years now, and my French is not as good as it should be, as you may have heard me talk about on the podcast. So, you know, it's really important to stay positive, because if you get stuck in a negative frame of mind, if you start feeling bad about your level, then that actually is counterproductive. It starts to drag you down. And there's no way that you can effectively learn language and use it when you think like that. So you have to be positive. You've got to enjoy the good moments, enjoy the little bits of progress that you make. And, you know, that's good. That's a very healthy attitude. So, you know, nice one for listening all the way to the end here. Good luck with your English. Keep it up. Leave your comments on the website as usual. Do join the conversation and practice doing some writing in English by leaving your comments on the website. Don't forget to download the Luke's English Podcast app for convenient access to the entire archive of episodes and some bonus content, including loads of phrasal verb episodes and some app-only episodes as well that you might not have heard. That's it then. I'll speak to you again on the podcast soon. Thanks for being a listener to this podcast. But for now, goodbye. Bye. 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 Thanks for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.